Hey everybody, Sarah Grillo here, back once again. And today we're going to talk about what kind of platform to use for your website. Now, it would seem like this is something that's kind of obvious, but there are a lot of different options that are available now for advisors that are really great options. And even if you're happy with your website, I would encourage you to listen to this podcast just so that you know what's out there. Because like I said, I see advisors doing a lot of really different things, having control over their websites in ways that they never have before. And I myself, I have to admit, recently redid my own website. I kind of just took it for granted that I would work with the existing person, and not that that didn't turn out great, but I kind of wish I had known about what we're about to teach you about here today. So really excited because I've got Ryan Russell here. He is the co-founder and managing partner of 20 over 10. Da-da-da-da! Hey, Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Good. So what you got going on at 20 over 10? Tell us.
Yeah, a lot of really great stuff. So actually yesterday we just gave a really incredible webinar. Samantha, our head of sales and marketing, just delivered a webinar on blogging 101. It was really, really fantastic, super well attended, and really, really excellent questions there. Some new changes and updates to our platform too. So for those that are, you know, familiar with 20 over 10, we really push a lot of independent thought leadership. So we completely overhauled our blogging platform.
So wait, hold on. Just tell people what exactly is 20 over 10.
Yeah, great question. Perfect place to start, right? So 20 over 10 is a digital marketing tool and website development tool specifically for financial advisors. And we have a couple key things that make us unique, a lot of which I'll kind of touch on today. But yeah, that sort of leads into not only the new features of our current platform, but we're actually going to be excited to be making some big news here in the next month or two about a new product release. We think it's going to be pretty huge, so stay tuned.
Right. Sounds good. Yeah, you guys always got something cooking at 20 over 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm always seeing Samantha on social media, and she is, by the way, like, Samantha also, you know, runs the firm with Ryan. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we have four team members, and Samantha plays a very, very important role on our team.
Yeah, follow her on social media. Man, she's like an animal out there. She just sees everything. You know, she's great on social media, so she's a great person to follow and keep informed. So as the subject of this show is how to choose a platform, what can you tell us, Ryan, about the different options that advisors have and what they should be considering when they're confronted by this decision?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, I think, you know, we should address the fact that this can often seem like a very intimidating process. You know, a lot of the landscape around sort of websites and digital marketing is not something that's really, you know, second nature to advisors all the time. So I think there are some key points that I wanted to kind of touch on so that as you're choosing a platform, maybe some things that you want to consider or at least questions that you want to ask as you're considering various platforms.
Mm-hmm. What are those questions?
So I think the first thing right out of the gate, and I think, you know, as a financial advisor, one of the big things that we'll think about is cost, right? And so there's a couple different routes you can go in the financial industry or in any industry really in terms of creating a website that really meets your unique needs. You know, one of the questions that I always get is, you know, what is the difference between a provider like 20 over 10, which is a CMS, a content management system that allows you to log in, be able to make changes without the need of, you know, using a developer, and something like WordPress.
Hold on a second. So I just got to kind of slow down here. So for the people that might be listening to this, that don't come from this background or have never done this before, what does that mean exactly? Content management system doesn't require you to use a developer.
Yeah, a content management system allows you to be able to log in, update content without the need for leveraging an outside developer or really touching any piece of code.
So it's code, that's the word I was trying to get you to say. You read my mind!
Yeah. Yeah. And so there are a couple different ways, and cost actually is a larger discussion because cost applies to ongoing maintenance, but also that startup cost too. And I think that the startup cost is something something that advisors sometimes aren't aware of. So for those that want to create, say, a custom WordPress site, they want to build a site from scratch, from the ground up, there is generally, and you can assume, a very hefty upfront cost, right? The cost of development to create these themes is going to be pretty
pricey. They got to make their own code. They got to do the codes. They have to create codes.
Absolutely. And even before that, it starts with wireframes. And that's even just assuming that you've, you know, already created your own content. So there's an additional cost if you need to leverage copywriters to be able to create content for you to help identify what your unique value propositions are, right? And so this is all paid sort of upfront. With those CMSs like 20 over 10, often
content management systems, CMS,
yeah, those content management systems like 20 over 10 are, they don't come with these huge sort of like $10,000 plus price tags to initially create a site. Now, additionally, you know, creating a website is a lot like, you know, having a car. Like it needs maintenance, right? You can't assume that you'll create a site and 10 years from now, you'll never have to address anything related to the content or code. So you can assume that, you know, you're going to have to pay that developer for ongoing maintenance. WordPress specifically comes with the need to update plugins. These might be additional services that you know, really sort of metaphorically plug into your website that you can leverage. To,
like, for example, what's an example of a plugin?
Yeah, so plugins could be, you know, different integrations. You could have, you know, social feeds. But these plugins are actually really important. And if they're not updated, they can create security issues in your website. So they become a little bit less secure.
So an example of a plugin is, for example, like on my website, for example, sarahgrillo.com, you can see my Twitter postings directly on my website.
Absolutely.
That's a plugin. Perfect. Or you can go and you can sign up for my newsletter because a little box pops up and you input your email address. That's a plugin.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Now, these things require coding.
Without a doubt, right? There's a development aspect to this where developers are going to be helped sort of building out to make sure that these plugins play nicely with your front-facing website. And there's some ongoing maintenance, like with any piece of technology, that you'll have to maintain to make sure, you know, things are updated. And with that comes a cost, right? Nobody works for free. So when you leverage those development teams, you know, you can expect to either pay, you know, a retainer. So, you know, a fee over maybe a specified period of time or a per hour. And those can, you know, be hefty, right? Now, this doesn't even touch on the fact that in our industry, in finance, there are some very, very important considerations that we have to, you know, take into account for things like archiving and record keeping. So now you're talking about costs, not only of development, not only of copywriting, not only of hosting your website, but also now in terms of those sort of third-party needs, an additional service like an archiving service that allow you to capture all of these changes. So in the event of an audit, you can provide the necessary information to those auditors.
What exactly gets archived? What has to get archived?
All of your marketing content, right? You need to ensure that all of your communication to the outside public, all of those changes, all of those new bios, all of those new blog posts, the updated contact information, the updated descriptions of your services and fee schedules, they need to be archived, and it needs to be clear not only what those changes are, but also when they've been made. Right. So you have a responsibility as a financial advisor, you know, to ensure that you're capturing these. And there are services
you've got to keep track. You can't just keep the most updated copy, like the 2019 stuff. They also could ask you, oh, wait, I want to see what this was a year ago, because somebody could make a claim. Oh, on their website a year ago, they said this or that, and they made this fictitious claim. And the regulators need to know, they need to see a copy of what that was to prove your guilt or innocence.
Essentially, yes, right? So they need to be able to see all of the changes over a specified, you know, period of time. So they could ask, you know, let's see your changes for audit over the last 12 months. You need to be able to provide those. And that can sometimes be, you know, when you're working with these third-party archiving services, that can be time-consuming, but it can also be costly. You know, those generally come with a monthly fee attached to them that can be anywhere from 50 to, you know, 100 plus per month just for the archive.
Holy smoky bokey.
Yeah, so it gets really hefty in that regards. But this is why I think the content management systems become a much more attractive service for the financial industry for a couple reasons. 20 over 10, for example, and it's not, to be clear, not, all CMSs, not all content management systems are created equal, right? Mm-hmm. But 20 over 10, for example, we have the ability for you to go in, sign up at no cost, and then the only cost that you can incur is the monthly fee. Or if you do want to work with somebody to create a very tailored solution for your website, you can pay us an upfront fee. And then, there's that standard sort of monthly cost that goes on. But generally with these content management systems that are specific to finance, oftentimes, those monthly costs are your hosting, your archiving, your SSL certificates. So this is what gives you that HTTPS address, right? So it puts you at that secure domain. And all of this is included, right? So you're
Does
really-
Does every advisor website have to be an HTTPS?
It should be, in terms of SEO, so search engine optimization. I mean, Google has been very explicit to say they will continue to prioritize sites that are secure.
But advisors don't really care about SEO, a lot of them.
Yeah, but I mean, they certainly should care about security, right? So SSL certificates, are an important piece of this. And so that HTTPS address ultimately encrypts a lot of the data that's being sent to and from your website.
Right. So if you're collecting email addresses through your website.
Exactly.
Okay. A lot of people get confused about this, though, because they think that because their website may have that client login screen where it takes you to like Schwab or TD, like it links to the portal. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people will say, well, if I'm, not that you don't need HTTPS, right? I'm not discouraging that. But I mean, I think we should just make the distinction that are you on the hook for you're not on the hook for security of financial information that's input into the Schwab portal if the person accesses the Schwab portal through your website.
Yeah, so I just want to make a very clear distinction here. So a decent practice and what we see a lot is people might have a client login button at the top right of their website. And when a user clicks on that, they are directed to an external URL, so another domain. Maybe for Schwab or Fidelity or
eMoney, like whatever.
And no, so in that case, you're sending them off your site, and it is the responsibility of those institutions to make sure that they are indeed secure. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be considerate of security, even if you're just collecting things like names and emails. I mean, again, getting back to sort of the SEO, we can see now privacy is becoming and security is becoming more and more of an issue culturally. I mean, we're seeing, a lot of data breaches. I mean, they come out almost daily now. And so we want to always make sure as advisors that we're instilling the trust in our users, our site visitors, that we're adhering to those best practices as it applies, to their users' information. Right. And again, I think perception of that HTTPS and the prioritization of search engines like Google gives us that additional push to say, hey, this is no longer something that is a luxury. This is something that we really have to prioritize, sort of in the industry. Right. SSL certificates are incredibly important. We should take security very, very seriously.
But it always boils down to complying with the exact laws that you need to comply with.
Yeah.
So if I'm an advisor, how do I know that I'm complying with the laws that I need to comply with in terms of security for my website?
Yeah, so this is, we could really get down the rabbit hole here. So I'll give kind of a top level approach because you could,
That's your compliance officer.
You should be working with your compliance officer. And I want to be very, clear here too, sort of the legal requirements versus best practice, right? So we always want to adhere to best practices. Again, that's, you know, those SSL certificates, that HTTPS address, that, you know, sort of secure experience, like for your website. Laws vary, even, you know, outside of the borders of the US about how you're collecting and storing information as well. So if you're doing business, you know, with anybody, you know, overseas, the European Union has come out with the GDPR rules that are, you know, very explicitly outline how you need to maintain, you know, those records. Now, for the most part, those don't really apply to, you know, most advisors, but, you know, still something to consider. Again, mm-hmm. It's just another moving part in this whole website experience. And it kind of goes back to the fact that with a CMS tool, like that content management tool with a company like 20 over 10 or another financial, you know, website builder, you really can leverage and lean on that team to ensure that you're meeting those best practices. Right? Mm-hmm. And not only in terms of the website that you provide, but also the resources that they can supply you through their own support channels, right? So as you do have questions, you're not working with a developer who might work across a variety of industries. You're really working with a professional exclusively in finance. So you can go and get specific answers that are hyper relevant to you as an advisor.
Right. Okay. Now, let's just go back to the whole idea of maintenance, because I don't know many financial advisors that actually want to be in the business of devoting a lot of time to maintaining their website. You know, whenever I do a project with somebody and I write I write content for people's websites. So, I mean, my experience is that by the time we're done with this process, it's like no one ever wants to hear the word website again, because there's so much. It's such a burden for a lot of these advisors to do a website overhaul.
Yeah.
Probably like 60 to 90 days. And by the end of it, everybody's like, I don't even care what the website says. Just, I don't want to see this anymore. So, but on an ongoing, what do you think is the model that really serves advisors best in terms of for them not, you know, not having to be always on the phone with the IT person, worrying mm-hmm. about every single, we mentioned like widget or every single plugin update. You know, if I'm like, let's say a small or medium-sized RIA firm or independent broker-dealer firm, how do I manage, like, what do you recommend? What do you think is the best way for them to
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think it's two separate conversations. So the first is, you know, if you are working with an outside developer, you know, you should, you know, schedule out, you know, to sort of meet or evaluate, you know, any sort of maintenance, at least quarterly, just to assess if there's anything that needs to be done to maintain sort of the security or functionality of your website. Again, you know, with a content
that costs like $80 to $100 an hour a lot of times, by the way. I mean, look, I'm not, this is not an official quote, but just for all of you who are listening to this, I mean, I've generally seen that as the cost. So just kind of keep that in mind, that if you're doing a custom website built from scratch, not using like a template or whatever, it really can add up. Like, for example, when I redid my website, now granted, my website is an e-commerce site because I sell services through my website and people can just sign up right there. But in exchange for that, I had to design a pretty powerful website, and I have my own web developer that does this. Well, what happened was, and nothing against my web developer, but in the beginning, after we set it up, there were so many bugs. Like one day somebody was on my site and they're like, Sarah, like, I can't click this blog, it doesn't work, or like something went wrong in on my contact page. And then here's the situation that you're in, everybody. You need that bug fixed. I mean, there's always bugs in any website, in any code, there's probably gonna be bugs. But if it's something major, like on my contact us form, I'm like, I can't have people, like when I've already done the work of having them get interested in contacting me, it's the most important page on the whole site as far as I'm concerned. I'm not going to have people not be able to email me through my website and be like, oh, I'll just come back later and then never come back and I lose the business. So I had to get it fixed. And then my guy's like, you know, this could take 4 hours, like, but we don't know. It may take more than that. I'm like, holy smoke, you know, like, this could be out of control. These costs can get out of control. So if you're like prone to be overwhelmed by something like that, or you don't have like a budget that's flexible, just keep that in mind that these bugs do happen. And then when they happen, you have no choice but to get it fixed. Otherwise, your website might not work, and that's defeats the whole purpose of what you did in the first place. So just keep in mind, you could be at the mercy of the bugs.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, too, we're really putting a lot of trust into the fact that they're built to sort of meet best practices in terms of, you know, HTML and CSS to make sure that they're, you know, optimized for, you know, like search engines and, you know, just in terms of basic functionality. I mean, it's still a bit wild that, like, you know, some of us in finance are still considering that, like, a website that's mobile friendly is still a luxury. And like, I can tell you, you know, emphatically that it is not a luxury. It is an absolute necessity, because the majority of your visitors are coming to you from their phones and from their tablets. They're not on their desktops, right? They're looking at you while they're walking down the street or at lunch, while they're doing their due diligence, while they're searching for that financial advisor or trying to connect with their existing financial advisor to be able to log into their accounts or be able to get a new piece of information or find your contact info, right? And so I think you bring up a really good point. But, you know, I don't think it's fair. I don't want to skew this entirely in the direction of, well, this is why all of the reasons that a content management system that's built exclusively for the financial advisor is the way to go. Because I think there are actually a lot of pitfalls that we have to be aware of there as well. And so I have a duty to be sort of objective. You know, obviously, in terms of development, and working outside of those content management systems, you know, the biggest problems I see are the unanticipated costs, the time, and the fact that oftentimes these developers aren't working exclusively in finance. So, you know, I think as advisors, a lot of us, and probably even listening to this, podcast right now, are going, wow, I really don't know what I don't know. And so we want to really leverage people that are, you know, sort of well-educated in the expectations of the industry to be able to deliver something that's really good. Mm-hmm. Now, but to be clear again, to go back, it doesn't mean that all content management systems are built equally. There are some pitfalls here, right? So in a content management system, you know, you have to be very careful because the issue of ownership comes up. And ownership can apply to a lot of different things. It can mean the actual files to the website. It could mean your own content that's on the website. And it could mean the content that you're actually leveraging. Now, when you work with a developer, it's expected then that the ownership of all of those assets transfers to the user. So you are in control of all of this, right? So you can move those files. You know, if you change, you know, your domain, all of that can change with you. All that content comes with you. And it's not always the case, you know, with those content management systems in finance. And this is actually the reason I wanted to create 20 over 10 is I saw a hugely problematic approach to marketing in this industry. And it was the fact and the problem of ownership of content. What we're seeing now is, you know, there were players in the industry, you know, content management systems specific right. to finance that were allowing advisors to be able to use content. Mm-hmm. And what advisors weren't really understanding was they didn't own that content. They were simply leasing it. And what that meant was when they went to leave that platform, that content couldn't go with them. So all of those.
What is an example of that kind of content?
Yeah, so templated blog posts, right? So, you know, a lot of providers will say, hey, you know, here's 10 articles that you can just post directly to your blog. Well, the problem is when that provider jacks those prices way up, which we've seen a lot of providers doing over the past year, you know, and you go to move to another platform, well, all of a sudden, you're not going to be able to pull that content over because that is owned by, you know, the original provider. And so, like, you don't maintain ownership of those. That's probably the most popular example.
Yeah, that's why I'd say, but that's kind of like generic uniform content anyways, you know?
Yeah, but you'd be surprised. I mean, the majority of advisors are still sort of under this idea that that is effective marketing. And so, you know, there's a reason why no other industry markets that way, right? As advisors, we find ourselves really kind of against the ropes sometimes because our hands are tied by compliance. And so, you know, what providers can say is, well, these are compliance approved, you know, or like you can use them as is. Well, then what happens is hundreds, possibly thousands of advisors use them. They have a very low click-through rate, which means very few people actually click and read them. There's almost no conversion on them, and we're paying, you know, pretty hefty fees to leverage.
It's just garbage in and garbage out. Like, I mean, I tell you this, no lie, that I get on the same day the same exact newsletter from two advisors that work at two different companies.
Yeah, and I can almost guarantee
the same subject line.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what else, I guarantee if you did click through to go to those websites would look identical, right? We used to laugh in our office. There's this like very famous story where, you know, it was always kind of funny. And this happened, you know, a couple years ago where we were just seeing like tons and tons of advisors that had the same image on their website. And it was always,
the retired couple on the beach sipping champagne.
Oh no, this was the retired couple in the red convertible going over the Golden Gate Bridge. And, but the problem was these would be like advisors in Delaware. I mean, it made absolutely no sense. And so, but it was just kind of one of those things where advisors were like, well, I'm not able to change it, right? And so it presents another problem. There are some CMSs that don't allow you to effectively edit the look and style, the imagery of your website. And you really need that, right? Because at the end of the day, what this website does for you, and I think that this is, you know, the most important point that I can make, is that this website speaks for you when you're not around to speak for yourself. I always remind advisors when I present at conferences, when I meet with, you know, individuals, to say, when you meet a new client, you can rest assured that it may be your first time having a conversation with them, but it was not the first conversation they had with you. They went and almost certainly did their due diligence to understand who you were, what your experience was, right, to figure out a bit more about your services and ultimately how to contact you. So they've gone in and they know quite a bit about you. And if you're saying everything as everyone else, it's very hard for, you know, you to be able to stand out and clients to be able to self-qualify whether or not they are a good fit for you too.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, I think marketing is evolving right now. And I think we're really sort of on the tipping point where a lot of advisors are sort of opening up being like, wow, like I need to stand out. I need to show my value proposition. But here's another thing. And I think now, listen, I have to tell you, Sarah, so I'm actually also a professor, an associate professor at Penn State University. And I teach design. And one of the things that I do is something called user experience. And what user experience really studies is how people interact with, you know, different media, right? So One of the things that I'm going to do today is, and I apologize, this is the professor in me, I'm going to give everybody homework, right? I'm going to ask you to do what we call the 5-second test, right? Pull in a stranger who's never seen your website or your social presence. And what I want you to do is pull up your website, show it to them for exactly 5 seconds. Ask them the following questions. What do I do? Who am I? How do you get in contact with me? If they can't answer those questions, you do not have an effective website design. Right? Another conversation is people always ask me, so is this based on how people read the web? And I always joke to say, you know, actually, people don't read on the web. You're using the wrong verb. People scan, right? When we visit a website, we're not there for very long. We need instant gratification, so we are scanning pages to get the information we need quickly. And so this 5-second test can really effectively help you assess whether or not you're effectively meeting these qualifications, right? And I think it's a very simple thing that people can do to say like, well, is it working or is it not, right? The proof is in the pudding. If they can tell you those three pieces of information, you're doing a great job. You're already ahead of 90% of the advisors out there. But if you're not, well, we need to step back a little bit and figure out, okay, you got them to your website. Well, now what do you want them to do? It's kind of the funniest thing about our job is that we ask advisors this all the time. And so many times, it's the first time an advisor has ever thought about that. They're always like, you know, wow, oh, they're on my website. They got to my website. They found me, that they've never thought about. Yeah, but there has to be purpose there. Do you want them to call you? Do you want to collect their information? Let them download an ebook, understand your fee schedule. You know, there's all sorts of different calls to actions that you can prioritize in a website to make sure that when they get to that website, we need to really direct them on what to do next. Right. And that might mean getting in contact with you. Maybe you're out there, you know, really looking for new clients, or maybe it's, you know, ensuring that your current clients have a way to log into their, you know, their portals. And it might be multiple portals. Right.
I think that one of the things, one of the misconceptions that people tend to have is that the website has to drive leads.
Exactly. Yep.
And that somebody is going to contact you the first time they go to your website.
Yeah.
And I just think that in our industry, that is too much to hope for, because you have to understand the online buyer has a different mindset than the person that heard about you through word of mouth or referral. The person that heard about you through their golf contact or their country club contact that is already your client, okay? The word of mouth referral from a client is not gonna place too much stock in what it says on the website. They're not gonna be scouring for information as if they're meeting you for the first time. They're gonna kind of assume that you're cool because his or her buddy said that you were, okay? Whereas the online buyer, somebody that did a search on, what do I need to do with my money if I'm going to get divorced? And you wrote a blog on that and they got to your website that way. Or the person that saw you speak at a conference and is now on your website is full of skepticism. And so what you really need to do is have engaging content on there, and you have to present yourself as a human being and not just a set of credentials, and show that you don't just look at them as a set of portfolio statements, and that this is a human-to-human interaction here. But just like when you meet somebody off of Match.com, and that being different than someone you would want to date that you meet in, like, church, there's all kinds of barriers that you have to get through. And the way you do that is by constantly giving them and feeding them information-rich, relevant content. But you have to have your website set up for this. So it's like, at least have a newsletter sign up, you know? Maybe you don't write a newsletter every 2 weeks. Maybe you do it once a month or once every 2 months. But at least get their emails. And that way you can connect with them on social media and have them follow you that way. There can be multiple touch points, but it's not just one of these one-shot deals. And that's where I feel advisors maybe need to be a little bit more patient with the online buyer, because you got to realize they're coming from an entirely different position. This is Match.com. This is not, I met you in college in our study group.
Sure. Yeah. You said so many important notes right there. I think that to, you know, remember that, you know, and it might not be that your website is there to, you know, generate prospects and new leads. But let's say in the event that it is, and I think that this is, you know, a very common practice, what you have to understand is we need to stop talking about just getting leads, and we need to start talking about getting quality leads. And there's a couple ways to do this, right? The first is, like you're talking about, and it goes back to our discussion about maintenance. Before we were talking a lot about technical maintenance, but let's talk a little bit about sort of perception maintenance, right? It is a very easy way to, you know, establish yourself as a thought leader by creating dynamic, engaging content on your website and disseminating that through your blog and then sharing through social media. Because you're absolutely right. People need to see you a few times before they actually engage with that click.
They need to see you or hear you, like a podcast or a video, not just a written word. They want to see the human being. Like, advisors, take advantage of this. You can make videos for cheap. You know, there are cheap ways to do it. don't miss the opportunity to come across as a human being.
This is something that we preach in our company, and I can't think of a better person who does this, and you mentioned it earlier, is Samantha.
Oh, man.
These are, by the way, no cost, right? We do it with an iPhone that she's holding, and she just talks. I mean, she is so filled with incredible information. And she actually started that series because she was just like, wow, I really think this industry needs help with this. I'm just going to put this out there. And it's just an iPhone, drop it into a free sort of website or a video host like Vimeo, and share across social media. But you got to a really other interesting point, and it's this idea of identifying ourselves as sort of who we are. And so here's another really important thing too, right? Your website needs to represent you, not only the moment you build it, but also 10 years from now. So it needs to be able to evolve with you. One of the things that we really pride ourselves on our platform is that, you know, the ability to not only change content and, you know, the design and, you know, add team members, add blogs, new pages, lead pages, all of these great things. The challenge here is that the website is going to evolve with you. Now, with that, you need to do a really good job of establishing kind of who you are. And I think part of that goes to not only what you say, but how you say it. A common question that we get from advisors is, hey, I'm going to take a profile photo and I'm going to write a bio. Do you have any tips? Here's two very easy tips for you if any listeners are going to go back and maybe revisit this. If you are somebody who doesn't wear a suit and tie to work all day and you don't wear a suit and tie to go visit your clients, don't wear a suit and tie in your portfolio picture. This should be a representation of who you are, right? Additionally, when it gets to your bio, you need to be very considerate on, you know, how you're writing it. If you are, you know, very friendly, very informal, it needs to be reflected in sort of how those biographies are written, how the content on your website is written too. Because again, this is that identity online that is effectively you when you're not there physically, right? And this is what people are ultimately going to interact with, at least first. And so it's real two easy tricks to help people sort of better connect, to show them that, hey, you know, we're just not, you know, some sort of robo advisor. Like, there's a human being on the other side of this. So if you are somebody who is trying to establish yourself in a niche, maybe you are a recently divorced advisor who specializes in working with men or women who are recently divorced, sharing some of those personal experiences and why maybe you've grown into this niche is incredibly important, right? It helps people connect with you on an emotional level, and it helps them remember you too, right? So from a marketing standpoint, it's a very effective way for you to make sure that you're resonating with your audience.
Right. Okay, Ryan, listen, I think we got to wrap up here.
Okay.
So just to bring it back to the original point of this show, what are three things, just summarize it real quick for everyone listening to this around the world, that people should know when they're picking a platform for their website? Three things.
Yeah, three things. The first is going to be cost. Make sure you have a firm understanding of not only what the cost is going to be to set it up, but also that ongoing maintenance if and when problems arise or changes need to be made. Cost is a big factor, obviously, in everything that we do. And as Sarah, as you mentioned, you know, sometimes that cost can really creep up, and it can creep up very fast. So make sure that you fully understand the scope of what that cost is going to be.
Yeah, because the bugs creep. Remember that phrase, advisor, bugs creep. Bugs creep up costs, okay?
Yeah. The second thing is you want to put yourself in a position to be with a platform that is going to help sort of, you know, your firm is going to evolve over time. Your website needs to evolve over time with you, okay? The idea that we develop a website in 2018 and then we don't revisit it again until 2018 is just bad marketing. So you want to make sure that, you know, the content, your team, that thought leadership, your services, all those lead pages, your niches, everything can be represented, and understanding that these are likely going to change over the next 10 years, maybe over the next year, right? And so you want to make sure that you have a platform that's going to allow you to be in control of those changes when you want to make them.
Number three.
And then the last thing is ownership, okay? For those of us that are out there using just prefab content, ask the question, what happens if I leave this platform, right? I cannot say this. This is very important. Your content needs to be yours, right? So you need to make sure that, you know, if you leave, you can take it with you. And this is a really important part. We preach that we very much think that that template-based approach to what's called farmed content is very, very bad in terms of, you know, SEO and marketing. And we need to get away from that.
Well, I think people should at least be aware, right?
Absolutely.
Whether or not you want to own it, just be aware. Do I own it or not?
Yeah. So you can be prepared, you know, for, you know, if you leave, what happens to that content and how it's going to affect your site and presence online. I'd say consider those three things as your top three questions. And certainly, Sarah, as you've probably seen, I'm very long-winded. So I could name 100 more, but I think those are the three that I would prioritize in those initial discussions as you're doing your own investigations through a new website.
Okie dokie. All right, Ryan. Thank you so much, everybody. Ryan Russell of 20 Over 10. I'm going to put it in the show notes how to find out more about what they do. And also, folks, please, if you could subscribe, rate, and review my show, I would really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
See you next time. Bye.